You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNADS.com.
The advice and opinions expressed by the hosts of Autism Live and her guests are meant solely as suggestion and should not be in any way construed as child-specific advice. Any choices you make in determining your child's treatment are completely at your own discretion.
Good morning and welcome to Autism Live. I'm Shannon Penrod, and I'm so excited to be here this morning. We've got a big, big show for you with wonderful guests. I'm really excited about it. And it's Monday. How can we not be excited? In fact, it's the last Monday in January of 2024. It's the 29th. How did that happen, you guys? If you can explain that to me, time hurries on, right? But we're here. If you are just joining us for the first time, welcome. I'm Shannon Penrod, and I describe myself as a proud pony. A pony is my acronym for a parent of a neurodiverse individual, and I'm excited to be here with you on this journey. Here on Autism Live on the Autism Network, our entire mission is to provide information and inspiration to the autism community in total. That starts with individuals who are themselves on the autism spectrum. They are the beating heart of our community. We try to make a safe space here for them to voice their opinions, thoughts, concerns, whatever, especially on our shows, Stories from the Spectrum, but on all the shows that we do with them in mind, right? But then we also include within that community everyone who loves those individuals and helping them also to get to resources to be able to help the individual that you love on the autism spectrum. That's really what we're about here. We're not about anything else other than that is that we believe in the rights of individuals who are on the spectrum and helping them to get to the lives that they want. Not the lives that we want for them, the lives that they want. Sometimes that's a dicey little distinction, right? Especially for those that are of us that are parents. But you know, it's a thing. There are things that we may want for our kiddos, and yet it's more important that we help them to get to the things that they want. This is what my son teaches me on a daily basis, and I'm grateful to have that. We're live right now, as I said, on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and about a dozen sites, and our fabulous Chris Desmond is already starting to show you on the screen if you're watching us. You might be listening. He's showing on the screen all the different ways that you can connect and listen to the show or watch the show. Of course, we have a very robust YouTube channel. We've been doing this show. We're in our 14th year, so you can imagine the topics and the guests that we have covered over the breadth of that time. You can go onto our YouTube channel, and you can search topics and find out. I have a very funny story about our jargon today that I'll tell in a minute, but there's all kinds of things there for you. Please search. We are constantly trying to update keywords and things so that you can efficiently find what you're looking for. But there is a library of videos that we're excited about that are there for you, and they're free. We also are available as a podcast, audio-only podcast, and we know and love that many of you prefer to take us with you wherever you go, and that for a while, we were doing the video podcast, too, but overwhelmingly, you guys said, no, we don't need that. We just need the sound. So we love that you can get that wherever you can download a free podcast. We are available for you. So we hope that you check that out. Now, I will tell you that we struggle over 14 years, you can imagine, to make sure that we can keep the lights on because we're trying to do everything that we do free to the people that are watching and listening. That's really been our thing, our like flag in the sand, the entire 14 years. So, and we struggle sometimes to be able to do that. The way that you can help us to keep that to be free for you is you can like, share, tell other people, and review. That's the best thing you can do for us. Hello, Rodney Cox. So thrilled that you're here. But if you can, whatever platform you listen on, like, share, subscribe, review. All of that helps us. I do want you to know that you will listen to, whether you're on YouTube or listening in podcasts, you will see advertising because that's one of the ways that we help to keep the lights on. We hope that you'll appreciate our sponsors because they're making it so that it's free for you. Some of you have written in and said over the last year that you really would like to be able to pay a small amount to be able to get the podcast free of ads. And we've made that possible for you if you go to Glow, glow.fm/autismlive. When you go there, you are offered, there it is, glow.fm/autismlive for $5 a month. And if you pay for it across a year, it's even less. You can get the podcast, and not just Autism Live, but for this one, you get Autism Live and Ask Dr. Doreen for one small fee, and you get it free of ads, which is pretty awesome. And again, we're not trying to make money off of you. We're just trying to keep the lights on. So if that's your thing, please check that out. Wonderful. I do want to say that in just we're going to do Jargon of the Day, but then in just a few minutes, we've got some really wonderful guests on. You know I love some toys. And you know I love some games. And all throughout the year, I'm always searching and looking. And now toy companies reach out to us, too, and say, hey, we've got a new toy. We think it would be great for folks on the spectrum. And I'm always open to that. But I'm also actively looking throughout the year. And when I find something, I'll flag it and be like, oh, I can see this as being one of our award winners in our Autism Live Toy and Gift Guide that we put out every November. So I saw a toy that was put out by M&J Games, and I was like, I really like this, and flagged it. I did not reach out to them because, you know, I'm busy, and I should reach out whenever I like something, but no, I don't have the time. But I liked it, and we gave it an award, and then it was hilarious, and the toy guide had not, I think it had just gone live, like maybe 24 hours, and I got a notice from M&J Games saying, hey, we've got this game that we think would be wonderful for folks on the spectrum, and I was happy to be able to write back to them and say, yes, and I gave you an award in the toy guide, and, you know, it was sort of love at first sight. So we've been talking to them, and I'm so thrilled that in just a little while, we're going to be joined by the founder and CEO of M&J Games, but we're also going to be joined by an amazing autism expert who was a part of this game coming to fruition. You guys are going to love this. So stick around. But you know how I feel about jargon. That there was a time and a place where I was so fatutzed by the jargon that would come up in our daily life that I think I threw a mini tantrum over it. Because I'm sure that you guys can relate to this. When you're trying to get information to help the person you love on the spectrum, you don't want to have extra obstacles, and it seemed like jargon was my obstacle on that given day. And I vowed that if I ever had a mouthpiece, I would start doing what we're doing now, which is for 14 years, we've been doing Jargon of the Day, where we take one word, one phrase, one acronym, we give you the actual definition of it, which often, when appropriate, and often it is appropriate, I make fun of the actual definition because it's just more jargon, and then we give you a working definition, which often makes the experts break out into hives. And then I try to give you examples of it so that we can start to know why would this be important to us. So last week when I was setting up the jargon of the day for this week, I was like, oh, I don't think we've ever done idiosyncratic language. And you know, I search for the actual definition and I search for the working definition, and I wasn't finding what I wanted. I wasn't finding the examples that I wanted. When I did the search, there were like two, and I wasn't wild about either one of them, but what was the third thing? It was a video of me explaining idiosyncratic language, and I said, well, I've reached the end of the internet. I'm searching for an answer to something, and I found our answer to it. And I got to say, I watched the original video, and I was like, okay, I understand this better now. I actually liked our video. And it was funny because in that video, there were toys all over the desk because we were reviewing toys back then. So we've come full circle. We have reached the end. But I'm very excited about it. So let's take a second. Do you know what idiosyncratic language is? I remember a time and a place when this was being said to me at IEP meetings, and I was like, what are they talking about? When is my child engaging in something called idiosyncratic language, and is it something that I should get concerned about? So let's take a look at our actual definition of idiosyncratic language. Okay, idiosyncratic language, speech characteristics that are errors in the pragmatics of communication. Well, that sounds horrible. Often involves language with private meanings or meaning that only makes sense to those familiar with the situation where the phrase originated. Does that really sound like errors? Okay, let's, to me, like I read this and I go, this sounds like something, a cancer. In the field of communication. So let's go to our working definition and see if we can't figure out what the issue is here. Idiosyncratic language is speaking in a way that assumes that everyone knows what you know. Okay, we talk about perspective taking a lot. The fact that if I have the ability to understand that my mind thinks things that are different than what your mind thinks. And if we are communicating with each other, I'm going to be a more effective communicator if at some point I'm starting to think about, you know, what do I see, what do I know, what do I believe, and what do you see, what do you know, and what do you believe. I'm going to be more empathetic. I'm going to be better at getting what I need from you if I am aware of the fact that you are having a different experience than me. And the truth is that a lot of folks that are on the autism spectrum, this can be, not in everyone, let's not speak in absolutes, but in some folks on the spectrum, this can be an issue. We've talked before about the Sally Ann test when they first determined, Simon Baron Cohen determined and did a test to see a group of three sets of children, children that were neurotypical, children that had Down syndrome, and children that had autism. And the children in his study that were neurotypical and the children who had Down syndrome were capable of understanding this perspective taking to solve problems. But overwhelmingly, the children on the autism spectrum were not. And for a lot of us, that was a big, okay, that seems like an issue that could potentially create social communication issues, right? And a lot of people began teaching theory of mind to folks on the spectrum to help them to understand my view is different from your view. Now, as a parent, my son went through, and I went through with him, this kind of teaching. And I'm here to say I'm a better person for having gone through that training with my son. And my son certainly learned perspective taking, and I think my son is better at perspective taking than most of the people that I've ever met. And I became a better, not a great, but a better perspective taker for having gone through this training. What does this say to me as a former teacher? These are skills, and skills can be taught, and they can be taught to those of us that are not on the spectrum and to people that are on the spectrum if they choose to, and that this can be a very beneficial skill. What does this have to do with idiosyncratic language? I think we've all had the experience, especially those of us who are parents, right, where our kiddo will say something. I loved one of the examples that I was reading that wasn't our example, but somebody else had written and said that there's a kiddo who likes to go to the park, and he goes to the park with his aunt, Aunt Polly. I don't know who it was in the story, but he goes to the park with Aunt Polly. And then he associates Aunt Polly with the park. Well, where idiosyncratic language comes in is that then when the child says Aunt Polly, he's not asking for Aunt Polly, he's asking to go to the park. And mom, who knows this little configuration, knows that when he asks for Aunt Polly, that he's asking for the park, and she can reconfigure it and go, oh, you want to go to the park, and take him to the park. How many of you have kiddos that are speaking in this way, in this code, that you can crack the code, but that maybe the babysitter can't, or maybe grandma comes to visit, and she can't, and we get that error in communication? I do want to make the case that we all engage in idiosyncratic language, right? That you have that friend that you have the shorthand with, right? That you can say something to and other people at the table don't know what you're talking about, but you guys know what that means. I don't think it's always an error in communication, but certainly for our kids, it is a code, and if we don't understand the code, I go back to the wonderful Oscar-nominated documentary, Life Animated, right, where Ron Suskin and his family and his son, they show his son was someone who would always, he didn't speak a lot, but when he did, he would take quotes from Disney movies, and everybody thought that that was just him saying quotes from Disney movies because he had nothing else to say. But what they discovered was it was idiosyncratic language. That when he was saying something from a Disney movie, it was his way of expressing what was happening. And when they finally got that, it was a way of opening up a world to have a dialogue with their son, and then his son made so much progress. So I think it's worthwhile to talk about it, idiosyncratic language. I don't love calling it an error. I think that it has the potential to be a problem, but isn't it interesting for us to know that it is tied to something? And that if you see that your child or a child that you love or even a teenager or an adult that you love is saying something over and over and over again, let's remember, all behavior is communication, right? What, and if you start to ask yourself, what are they communicating? And is it deeper than what they're actually saying? What is that tied to? I shared on the show a couple of weeks ago that we had, somebody had reached out to us because they have a student who is writing dates on paper over and over and over again. And I was like, I want to know what, you know it means something. We all know it means something, but we don't know what it means yet. And there's one incident where they've found what that date means, but they don't know what the other dates mean. I get excited about that because it's just another form of communication. Now, can we help the person to be able to perspective take to understand that we don't understand? Sure, there are lessons about that, and that's very exciting. But I hate it when people just think that our kids are engaging, our kids or teens or adults are engaging in these random behaviors, and it drives me crazy when people just go, well, it's weird or it's odd. No, it is a form of communication. We have not cracked the code yet. And a lot of times with idiosyncratic language, their mom or somebody who's with that individual a lot kind of gets it and translates. I just hope that we all think of these things and go, okay, what is it? What is it? And how can I help this person to be effective in their communication? That's a really wonderful thing. Saying hello to Pradip, they say, hello, how are you? 1, 3 years and 7 months, but speaking randomly and angry, different types, such as lying on the floor. I'm not sure. Can you help me? Because I don't know exactly what you're saying. You've got random speaking, angry, lying on the floor, things broken. You say someone else killed. I don't know if you mean that actually or metaphorically. Please explain a little bit. But this goes hand in hand with what we were just talking about, I think, based on what you're saying, Pradip. Everything is communication. And so if you were to ask yourself, when somebody lays on the floor, what is it they're trying to say? My son used to do a thing where if I would ask him to do something, the first thing he would do, some people call it spaghetti legs. I would call it the Gandhi maneuver. He would just lay on the floor. And that was him saying, I don't want to do that. He did not have the words to tell me that, so he laid on the floor to say, I'm doing civil disobedience. That's why I call it the Gandhi maneuver, to say, I'm not doing it, right? So if you were to ask yourself, what does this person want to communicate? What does this person want? Then we can start to look at how do we help them to be able to efficiently get their needs met with functional communication so that they don't need to lay on the floor, that they don't need to, my son would bang his head on the floor. or bite or hit or scratch or whatever. But we have to look at their needs first. What are they trying to communicate and what is it that they need? And have I given them a way to get that without engaging in this behavior? Please write in and tell us more so that I can understand more. But, you guys, we got to get to our guests because they're waiting and they're amazing. We are welcoming to the show, and I'm going to read their bios here, which are lengthy, but, you know, they're good. First of all, we're welcoming Dr. Christopher Manente. He is a PhD BCBA. All good, right? I told you we were going to have an expert in here. He's the founding executive director of the Rutgers Center for Adult Autism Services. Everybody just went, what? And a clinical associate professor at the Rutgers Graduate School of Applied and Professional Psychology. He is an accomplished professor, practitioner, and advocate who has dedicated his career to helping adults on the autism spectrum succeed within their homes and communities throughout their lifespan and across the context of school, work, relationships, leisure, and transportation. Can I get an amen from anybody? Yes. Dr. Manente has taught over a dozen distinct university courses for students across the undergraduate and graduate levels. He has authored articles in peer-reviewed journals, written book chapters, and has presented at numerous national and international conferences on a variety of topics related to the advancement of community-based educational, vocational, and residential opportunities for adults with autism. There's so much more, including that he was a sergeant on active duty with the U.S. Army's 101st Airborne Infantry Division. Thank you for your service, Dr. Manente. Additionally, Dr. Manente is a prior special education student who was often told by many of his teachers that he was too smart for his own good. Would we like to travel back in time and slap those teachers? And that he wouldn't amount to much. Now I want to kick them with a pointed shoe. We are also being joined, as if that wasn't enough, you guys, we're also being joined by Marley Aversa. She is the founder and CEO of M&J Games. I mentioned before, I'm a new fan of theirs. They're innovators of the popular What's Next life-size games. Their inaugural game, What's Next, a life-size board game, was created to provide family-friendly, screen-free entertainment. Over time, M&J Games diversified its offerings to encompass adult party games, family options, and adaptive games for individuals of all abilities, embodying a commitment to creating lasting memories and innovative play for everyone. She has a bachelor's degree in corporate communications from Drexel. With over 20 years of marketing experience, she plays a pivotal role in steering the growth and prosperity of the company. She actively balances her family life, and we are so thrilled. They're a family of four. She's got a son and a daughter. We're so thrilled that you guys are here to join us. So we're welcoming Dr. Manente and Marley. Hi, you guys.
Hi, Shannon. Thanks for having us.
Well, a thrill. You know, amazing to have both of you with us at the same time. I want to start by, this is a pretty interesting relationship between a game company and Rutgers. Who wants to answer this, but how did this relationship come about?
So I actually saw Dr. Manente on a newscast about Rutgers or CAAS, and I thought that this is a time that I'm trying to do more with my inclusion with the games, so this could be a cool next step. So I reached out immediately and sent him an email saying I'm interested in kind of knowing what RCAS is about, and I have these games that you could potentially use with that throughout RCAS. So I actually sent him, he responded almost immediately saying that he would like to see the special needs set, which was the one that you guys actually gave the award for. I have that right here.
Amazing.
And once he requested them, I said, you know what, I'm going to send him all the games, just as kind of a, hey, here's our selection of games. And it's a good thing I did, because I think the adult game, and correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Manente, the drinking game actually is what sparked the interest to create that a combination kind of between that and the special needs set, making it more of like an adult feeling, as opposed to the special needs set was more of a kid-friendly, active, physical game. This one makes you think.
Is that what drew you to it, Dr. Menente?
I mean, that certainly piqued my interest. There's no doubt. I mean, you know, Rutgers is absolutely a tailgating school, and we have, you know, with a really rich, you know, offering of athletic events, and our autistic college students here need to know how to, you know, engage and be incorporated in everything that our university has to offer. So it just seemed like it'd be a lot of fun, and was definitely a departure from what I was accustomed to when I thought about traditional quote-unquote board games. And, you know, Sharon, and I have to say, I think I'm probably, you know, preaching to the choir or even the converted and talking to your audience and saying that, you know, the quote-unquote field of adult services, these dysfunctional anti-systems of support that exist out there to help adults with autism succeed are, you know, they're just so antiquated, and they're, you know, really stale and really ripe for innovation and, frankly, downright disruption. So for me, you know, when I see anyone doing anything exciting or innovative that could potentially be a vehicle for driving change in the form of, you know, better services or better opportunities for practitioners in this space to help prepare young adults on the spectrum or help those young adults themselves be more prepared for the transition that to adulthood, which, you know, again, for many folks listening, you know, represents this terrifying void where you're almost kind of like jumping out into nothingness. You know, I always jump at it and see if we can do something special. And Marley has this brilliant game that I think is totally innovative and so much fun and engaging. And we've just had such a good time, you know, coming up with this cool new innovation. And all of the folks at our center too have really enjoyed, you know, playing and learning through this.
Well, and I want to talk more about the game, but I want to assure everybody we're going to cycle back to talk more about what's happening at for everybody. You guys are saying RCAAS, and it's behind you there, Rutgers Center for Adult Autism Services, right? Yes, that's real. That's what we're talking about, and we're going to talk more about that in a second. But I want to talk a little bit about the game first. So who wants to tell us what the game is and how you play it? And I've got, I've opened up mine here. I've got my dice. I've got my big dice. And I've got some of my scholarships.
I'm there with you.
I also opened up my, because I had a social expansion pack. But who wants to explain?
Yeah, so the original game, let me give you a little background.
Yeah.
The original game was made for family inclusion. So that's this game. It was made so that there was no activity on the game that even a grandparent couldn't do. So the initial thought was inclusion. Then I went to a local Spectrum Sports is their name, and they we played the game, the original game, with them, and there were certain tiles within the original game that were difficult. And not being in the autism community, I wanted to learn more. So I found this opportunity to take this to a next level, and we worked with them to make this social skill add-on to make it more adaptable from a physical standpoint. So then when I sent it over to Christopher, we needed a Dr. Menente. We had a conversation to make it more of an adult-oriented, like an adolescent roadmap to adulthood, we call it. So it's kind of a guide, and it really is, it was created with a neurodivergent mindset, but it, like, in mind, but it actually, it can be used for anyone who's just having trouble getting to that next step and kind of thinking about, okay, what do I want to do in the future? Where do I want to be in the future? Do I want to drive? What do I do if I get anxious? And I feel like it's a barrier that needs to be broken, where the games should be fun and inclusive for everybody. And certain parts of the original game, yes, they were fun in my eyes, but they were challenging in other eyes. So the 100% goal of this is to make board games should be fun. they should be inclusive for everybody, and I want to make sure that everybody has that same fun experience that my kids, that me, that my in-laws, my parents are having with my kids. You know?
People always ask me when I'm doing the toy guide, like, what am I looking for? Like, what gets me excited about a toy? And, of course, for me, the first thing is that it has to be fun. If it's not fun, then it's not a game and it's not a toy. And but then if you supercharge it and I'm learning something, skills that can help me, and it's empowering me to feel good about myself, then you're cooking with gas for me. And then you've got my attention. And that's really what got my attention about this game. And I believe, if I'm not wrong, the award that we gave you guys was the Empowering Employment Award. That a toy that can help us to gain skills that make it so that when we are on our first job, we are more successful. I get real excited. And that's the award that I gave you guys without even knowing you. So what do you want to say about this, Dr. Menente?
I actually just want to highlight, we talked a little bit just now about the importance of a game actually being fun, right, and being engaging. And I want to, there's a lot of things that makes What's Next very special, but for me, as someone who doesn't sit still well, who is always moving and always active, who supports and educates children, adolescents, and adults who fit that profile as well, the thing that is most engaging and most fun to me is in What's Next, you are the game piece, right? So we're calling this a board game, but the board that the game is played on is the world around you. So, you know, this isn't a traditional, quote-unquote, board game where someone is expected to have to sit still quietly and passively and wait for their turn and, you know, stay in one place. This game very much it expects people to get up and move around and do things. So I think for a lot of learners for whom traditional board games really aren't accessible because, you know, it's not fun to sit still without, you know, physical motion and engagement, this represents, you know, kind of a real evolution in providing something that is familiar as a traditional board game but is really different. And I think, you know, for some folks on the spectrum too, the idea of like playing the old Game of Life, right, where you have a plastic piece that you're moving around and you're supposed to pretend like that plastic piece is you, you know, I think this adds another layer of, you know, like concreteness, right? Because, you know, having to pretend like you're a piece of plastic moving around a cardboard thing on a table is pretty abstract, and I think this cuts through that and, you know, really puts you in the game. And when Marley first got in touch with me, you know, the original title of the game, What's Next, was, it just struck me, right? Because the original format of the game, the title of What's Next, I think, pertains to kind of like what space is coming up, right? You're going to roll this, you know, incredibly fun, huge foam dice and then like land somewhere and find out what's next in the game. But it was such a parallel to this incredibly scary and big picture question that not just autistic young people, but all young people are facing when it comes time to figure out, you know, what they're going to do with their life, right? What is next? Yeah. And so it was just a natural, I think, next step to create a game that both challenges players to think about what's next in terms of what's going to happen, you know, when you roll the dice and land on a new square, a new tile, but then also figure out what's next in your life more broadly. And of course, you know, this is a question that is of the most pressing to all families and individuals on the spectrum.
Absolutely. And I understand that a portion of the proceeds, when somebody buys the game, that a portion of it goes to your program, Dr. Menente?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, our program has an unapologetic commitment to high-quality services and, you know, paying our direct care staff and staff all levels an extremely good salary, and, you know, even separate from what, you know, our state currently provides in terms of budgets for individuals to get those supports. And we think this is critical to really establishing a real professional field of practice around the work we do. And so we do rely on philanthropy to cover the enormous cost of paying our staff so well. But, you know, we know that that is truly critical if we're going to create a workforce of specialized folks who know how to help people with autism across the spectrum succeed across adult contexts.
I love that you're not apologizing for that, because you shouldn't. So I want to, like, put into practice some of the things that we're talking about here. I've got the original pack here, and I love this because you get this stack of tiles, right? And right from the beginning, I love that it's our job to put these tiles. We're making the board however we want them, and it can go into the living room, and it can go into the dining room, and it can go into the bathroom. We can choose, and each one of these tiles says something different. They're numbered so that I can follow along. As a parent, thank you for this, because I know my child who would just take them and throw them everywhere, but they're numbered so that we're teaching numbers and doing all of that as well. You're not going to get bored playing this game. What do you guys, while I'm showing some of these, talk about how you play the game and what your mission is with this.
So the initial mission of the game was to be so simple that anybody could figure it out. There are 5 steps in the initial instructions on how to actually play the game. However, when we started creating the new game, What's Next, a life-size transition game, which is the adult version, the adolescent version of the game that you have there, they're actually on pre-orders right now, and we're hoping that they are here by the start of Autism Awareness Month. That's our goal. Hopefully they'll be here a little bit sooner. They're on a boat right now. But this game has another step to it. So one of the biggest things that Dr. Menente and I worked on together and his team was creating this transition guide. So every game, the original games have just a 1-sheet step of instructions. It's pretty self-explanatory. But this one we wanted to make sure was adaptable, didn't matter what your needs are, your abilities are. We want to make sure that everybody is included, whether you are a little bit beyond where the game takes you. If you've played the game several times, you might want to change it a little bit. Some of these things might be a little bit further that you could take them. If you're feeling a little nervous, how do you calm down? And one of the little dots that we've put on here, it's a little hand, saying that, hey, you can use this guide to tell you, okay, if you are non-vocal, minimally verbal, if you are in need of another level of this game, it can enhance. And then also we can modify it a little bit just to keep the conversation going a little bit farther. So, for example, for this one is tile 16. You would just go to the book, look for tile 16, and we have ways to modify it, enhance it. And then if you're non-vocal, minimally verbal, you can point. And the facilitator has the discretion on which one would make more sense for their client. Whether the facilitator be the parent, be an occupational therapist, anybody can play the game, and just a teacher enjoy it and adapt it so that every person playing the game gets value out of it and has fun doing it and make some of these things that are a little bit nerve-wracking for some more fun. And it's easier to bring it up if a game brings it up, as opposed to just, hey, do you think you want to drive in the future? If the game lands on it, did you ever think about that? And it's more fun. And it goes beyond conversation and hopefully makes people more comfortable in the surroundings of the situations.
So I'm going to go out on a limb and say that I think, you know, this is available right now, the original game, and I think everybody should have that. Autism Journey with Elijah wrote in and said, this is so wonderful and refreshing. I'd like to be a part of this successful achievement. How do I purchase this, and what are the age requirements? So the original game is for 4+, and you guys can get that. You can go on to M&J Games, but we also have a link to it on the Toy Guide. But where would you like them to go to purchase it?
So to purchase any of the other games, the original games, it's mj-games.com. They're also available on Amazon. And the new transition game, you can pre-order this game now and just ensure that you have your copy when it comes in. Those are available strictly on the website of mj-games.com/transition. So it'll take you right to the pre-order page.
And what is the age that you're shooting for on that one?
So this one we recommend 14 plus, kind of a good age to start thinking about that. You could probably go a little bit earlier, depending on your person. It's another thing we have to know your audience.
But I think for anybody, starting with the first one, so you know a little bit about putting the tiles down and playing the game and establishing how super fun it is, and now we're going to, you know, then do the social add-on and then do the transitions, I think is a wonderful way to go about this. I see you nodding your head, Dr. Menente. What do you think?
Absolutely. And just to highlight that, I think that this game is so beneficial, you know, from a variety of perspectives. You know, transition planning can sometimes inadvertently feel like an interrogation, you know, where, you know, school counselors, teachers, you know, parents just have a list of questions that they want to ask an individual about, you know, are you interested in going to college? Are you interested in living alone? Do you want to drive? Where do you want to work? Right? What are your hobbies? What do you want to learn? Right? And I think individuals just get asked these questions in interrogation style so much that just the idea of transition kind of becomes aversive at some point. So to Marley's point, to gamify this process, I think makes it a whole lot less painful. It feels a lot less like an interrogation. And if you're a parent of neurodivergent kids, you know as well as I do, like it's at some point, like your kids just, you know, they've had enough, right?
Right.
They know it. They know they, you know. So I think it avoids that kind of tension, whereas a parent, you're just super worried about, quote unquote, what's next for your kid. And this gives like a fun, you know, mechanism for still, you know, trying to get them thinking about these things without you having to be the primary person who's always bringing it up. And from the individual's perspective, too, this isn't an autism thing. Like, all kids who are in their early teens and approaching adulthood get asked these questions all the time. However, a lot of the individuals on the spectrum that we work with may really struggle to have good answers when they're asked these questions. So this really gives them, you know, a fun way of practicing, you know, what they're going to say in a social situation when one of their peers says, hey, you know, what are you thinking about in terms of school, or, you know, what kind of jobs do you think you'll want to do? And those opportunities, you know, for developing friendships and other strong relationships really have to be capitalized on. I think that's, you know, what we've learned more than anything is, you know, the traditional social skills group where it's like a circle and it's a contrived question, you know, your favorite movie, what'd you do last weekend? It only gets you so far. I mean, you really need the opportunity to practice those component social skills that you acquire in more dynamic, more authentic contexts. And I think that this game represents an excellent, nice next approximation, you know, from that traditional kind of like contrived social skills group.
I love that because just the other day we were having a conversation about the sad state of preparation for this transition, and I was telling a parent who's about to have a 15-year-old about the whole ITP process, which is the individual transition plan that schools are supposed to be helping with. But unfortunately, many don't know. They're not even aware of what it is, how to do it, even though they're legally responsible for it. And the ones who do understand what it is, oftentimes it is exactly what you just said, that they're, I remember them giving my son a subscription to a website, which all it was one of those horrible job evaluation things where you answer a bunch of questions, and then it says, you should go be a baseball player. Or you should, you know, and there's like, and no one is there to help you to know, is that even something you want? And if you did, how would you go about it? Like, it's just a questionnaire with nothing else. which makes me so mad I want to, like, light my hair on fire and run into the street. Right? But that...
Don't do that.
Right. But no. That was considered helping him... That was considered helping him to find his chosen career. We're in a sad state of affairs for transitioning, which is why we're so happy we found you, Dr. Menente. But anyway, so this game can be a wonderful way of making it fun and starting the conversation, and it isn't all on you as the parent. What a lovely, lovely thing. And you mentioned that this really, these games can be for anyone. They really can. You can play this with all the neighborhood kids. You can play this with your teenager who is completely neurotypical and have a great time doing it. There's nothing about this that says we would only reserve this for folks on the spectrum. But I understand, Dr. Menente, that you would like for there to be more games, and that perhaps you're working on this, Marley, that are specifically for people on the spectrum. Talk to us.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, the opportunities are limitless. You know, one of the biggest challenges of moving us forward in terms of making sure there are better opportunities for autistic adults and other neurodivergent people is that there's just so much work to do. I mean, we're really, you know, still at the very beginning of creating formalized curricula for helping people be more included in their communities through transportation and employment, social engagement, recreation, and independent living. It's just, these aren't things that there's been an aggressive or meaningful focus on historically. As I know that you've talked about many times on your show, historically the greatest emphasis continues to have been placed on, you know, research focusing on early intervention and causes and cures and little kids and, you know, school-aged issues. And, you know, so I think, you know, there's going to be expansion packs related to transportation. So we brought up the question of, you know, do you want to drive? You know, there's some research that's emerging about the low number of people with autism who do have driver's licenses and choose to drive. And it's not that, you know, just people can't drive. There's just, it's complicated. It's just many aren't. And maybe many more could if there was, you know, better opportunities for training and learning that are accessible to younger folks on the spectrum. But using public transportation, navigating the community safely, knowing that not everyone has your best interest at heart, right? So here at Rutgers, you know, we have a beautiful university campus. But we are very much an urban university, and our students are sometimes very vulnerable, you know, and they believe what people tell them. And having, you know, expansion packs about navigating, you know, environments where you're going to be in contact with strangers and who might not always, you know, have the best of intentions. You know, we work closely with our local police department and, like, an expansion pack that involves how to interact with police officers, you know, when you're pulled over or, you know, when you need help. So, again, I think every issue or every pain point that adults with autism experience throughout the lifespan represents another opportunity for an expansion pack for what's next.
And so, Marley, is all this exciting?
One of the main goals of creating this is it's kind of like a starter pack, and then we can branch off on certain things like career goals. Okay, so pick your career goal. Now let's talk about what you can do to get to that next step, and those would be the next tiles to create conversation to any person in different ways to make them feel more comfortable with discussing what they feel like they want to do in the future, which is why we've got them in the modified, enhanced, and the nonverbal, minimally vocal, or vice versa.
Right.
I'm still new to this.
Back to all that jargon, Shannon.
Yes, yes. I'm learning. So let me tell you, I've learned so much from Christopher as far as just connecting to the autism community and things that I was never involved in that I'm very thankful I have the opportunity. And one of the first things that I did was take my daughter to play with Spectrum Sports initially because I wanted to make sure that all of the pieces of the game were interesting to her and interesting to them as well. So it was kind of to mesh, to break those barriers so that there is not as much of a scare between the two communities because, I mean, let's face it, we work better when we're all together.
Amen to that. And you're doing great, by the way, with the jargon. You're handling it really well.
Thank you.
I've been here forever, so I have no excuses. And I sometimes get and the phrases change it. Sometimes something is acceptable one day and it is not the next. So it's a changing landscape where we're all trying to be mindful and listening and saying, what do you need? And you're doing good. You're listening. So that's really good.
And for us, Shannon, I think, and Marley is doing an incredible job of this, but, you know, I think, you know, the designation of nonverbal that's been used for a long time kind of sells a lot of people who are, you know, non-vocal or minimally vocal short, because, you know, even the individuals who we work with who don't have a lot, who don't speak to communicate still have a whole lot to say.
Exactly.
And, you know, they communicate in a number of other verbal you know, forms. So I think as a field, we are trying to move more towards minimally vocal or non-vocal.
And it's frustrating sometimes because it's hard because you want to be mindful of where we are, but then we have people who are in their homes with their family members and they have a term that they've been using and you don't want to say to them, you know, they'll say, my child is nonverbal, and you don't want to say to them, you know, technically your child isn't nonverbal. You know, like it's because that is the way they identify. So it's
totally.
It's a minefield, but we try to be open and listen and give people what they need, right? That's really the ticket. But we're running out of time here, and I want to leave some time to talk about the Rutgers Center for Adult Autism Services because we've not had you on the show before, and it seems like you're doing some pretty amazing things. We're going to talk about how that aligns with M&J, but tell people what it is, Dr. Menente.
Absolutely, and Shannon, definitely happy to come back on another time and focus explicitly on our center, which is, you know, a unique university-based organization. We are the first of our kind in the nation and in the world. You know, Rutgers, as you may know, has a really rich history of supporting people on the spectrum. The first university-based school for kids with autism was founded here in 1972, and that's the Douglas Developmental Disability Center, founded by Dr. Sandra Harris. And I bring that up because it was 3 years prior to the passage of IDEA, right? Before, you know, kids with disabilities had the legal right to have a free and appropriate public education, they were getting one here at Rutgers. And, you know, the RCAS really is an extension of that history. You know, we are really pushing the boundaries as to what's possible and expected for autistic adults after they age out of their educational entitlement. And of course, you know, I'm sure that this has been said on this program many times, you know, and go over that services cliff or graduate to the couch. I'm sure everyone listening knows that, you know, quality of life outcomes for autistic people after they age out are really abysmal and pretty shocking related to employment, you know, emotional, psychological, physical health, social engagement, independent living, you know, community inclusion. You know, people with autism arguably have the worst quality of life compared to any other group of people living in our society today. And it just doesn't seem like anyone cares as much as they ought to. And so the Rutgers Center for Adult Autism Services, the RCAS, was really founded, you know, on this idea that, you know, we need to, you know, move the needle in creating an entire professional field of practice around this work in order to help this population of individuals who are failing to thrive throughout our nation and globally. And when I refer to a professional field of practice, I'm generally referring to examples of excellence in, you know, in programs that help people, formal college and university training programs that teach people how to be specialized practitioners in an area, and then research. And those three components are self-sustaining, right? If you have excellent programs, you can do research on what works best, and then once you have that research, you can train others to do that. And one component of a professional field of practice feeds another. And so it's been 50 years, and we have that in special education. You can go to any college and university, and if you're a bright-eyed, enthusiastic, early career educator who wants to work in special education, you can sign up for a formal program and learn how to be highly qualified in that. And so our center aspires to create and establish that same professional field of practice to help autistic adults succeed in the world across all of these adult domains. And so we have four different programs currently under our center's umbrella, and we work with all adults on the spectrum. You know, we have programs from our intensive outpatient clinic, which supports adults with the most complex, most severe, challenging behavior, even life-threatening, challenging behavior. And, you know, we have our college support program, which supports our autistic college students here at Rutgers, some of whom are already addressing some of the most complex problems and issues in fields like medicine or aerospace engineering, and everyone in between. And we're demonstrating that all adults with autism can succeed if only given the right supports and opportunities. And we're doing so in a way where we're also training the next generation of practitioners who want to specialize in working with adults.
Absolutely amazing, but I know, especially when people hear this in podcasts, they're going to have a bunch of questions about, like even when you were talking about the outpatient, I presume they need to live within a certain distance, or do you have people who, you know, the parents come and rent an apartment so that they can do your program?
Yeah, so we've not had anyone who's actually come and stayed in a hotel or rented an apartment, although we're in conversation with many people who want to. Our intensive outpatient clinic just launched a year ago as the world's first acute behavioral clinic for adults 21 plus. That's also situated within an inclusive setting, because many other acute settings that exist on the pediatric side of things exist in a hospital setting or other, you know, highly controlled, segregated setting. So, you know, we're open to that, and certainly, you know, we're looking to grow and help as many people as possible. So, you know, we would be happy to be in touch with anyone who desperately, you know, needs the help that we can provide, with the caveat that there's a lot of people in that situation, unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately. And some of the ways that insurance has changed has created this, you know, unfortunate group of people who are told that their insurance will only pay for that level of an intensive program, and yet the waiting lists, you know. So I'm always looking for more things that I can refer people to. Well, what you're doing is amazing. If people, and we're running out of time quickly, so I want to make sure that people know how to get in touch with both of these things. We talked before about if you want to buy any of the games, tell them where is best to go, Marley.
Yeah, absolutely. Any of the games are available on mj-games.com. The pre-order from the What's Next Life Size Transition game is exclusive to mj-games.com. The other games are also available on Amazon. And if anyone wants to get in contact with me, look on our socials at /What's Next Life Size Games, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, we're everywhere. Yeah. So I'll always respond. You'll get a response from me. I like to be involved, and one of the main things that I do as a CEO is to get involved and see everything that's going on, like, beyond my office. So I like to see everything that's going on outside, not just kind of staying behind a computer.
There we go.
I feel like I learn more that way, and I see my audience, and it's great. It's really been a great ride.
So remember, What's Next Life Size Games, all together, no spaces. That's pretty much their Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and there's a YouTube channel if you want to see some of the gameplay in action. Recommend that you go there. And Dr. Menente, it's Rutgers CAAS, RCAAS. Tell us where they can find you.
Yeah, so our main website is an excellent resource. It's rcaas.rutgers.edu. And then so there's tiles on our landing page there corresponding to each of our four programs. And if you click into any one, there's contact information for the teams corresponding to each of those programs. So depending if you have an interest in our acute behavioral support through our intensive outpatient clinic, or if you are a neurodivergent prospective college student who wants to come to Rutgers, you can go on our CSP page and get in touch with our team there. So that would be best. And also our organizational Facebook page, which is also the Rutgers Center for Adult Autism Services on Facebook. It's an excellent resource for, you know, current updates and contacts and just to stay in touch with all the work we're doing.
Well, you guys have been an amazing wealth of knowledge. We really have enjoyed you being here. Thank you for this wonderful, for all the games, right? And I do want to acknowledge that you've hooked Autism Journey with Elijah. She's homeschooling, and she wants to implement this in her program and talk about it with other people. And so I'm sure that there will be more people who will be interested in it as well. I think it's swell. Like I said, I gave it an award without knowing them. And, of course, now that I know them, you know, I'm like, oh, I'm so glad I gave you an award. but I did without knowing them, you guys, because I saw it. You know how you see something, you go, yep, they get it. I get it. It's all good. So glad that we could work it out. I know you guys have very busy lives and you need to get back to them, but I'm so glad that we worked it out and we're able to have you here on the show to share this important information. Thank you so much.
Our pleasure. Thank you, Shannon.
All right. Take care. We'll see you soon.
Bye-bye.
Just want to do a quick programming note that tomorrow we're live with Dr. Doreen Grampiche for Ask Dr. Doreen. You guys can be writing in your questions. Of course, I don't remember what the topic is. I don't know that we've even set the topic. I'll bet I haven't because it's been that kind of a week. But that will be tomorrow, and we look forward to having you guys here asking questions. If you have a question ahead of tomorrow, you know, you can always reach me, shannon@autism-live.com. And we've got a great guest for Wednesday, a young filmmaker in college on the spectrum who is moving and shaking, and there's a video about him, not a movie that he made, oddly enough, that's tearing it up on the internet. So we'll give you more information about him. You'll have an opportunity to talk to him as well on Wednesday. So that's it for now. I gotta run, but thank you for being with us. Until tomorrow, give your kiddos a hug from me and one for you too. Bye-bye for now. If you found anything helpful in this video, please give us a like. In fact, make sure that you smash that subscribe button on YouTube and give us a like on Facebook. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Instagram for important updates. And please download our free podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much. See you next time.